Real life.
Superpowers.
I think that you need to respect the other side, and you need to learn to teach them how to respect you, not by asking it, by earning the respect and making sure that they understand what they need to learn from you. But also don't forget that you can learn from them. So don't show up as the sheriff, but build your trust and earn your respect from doing, not by asking or by expecting people to respect you.
Welcome to today's episode of the Real Life Superpowers podcast. I'm Noah Eshet, co-hosting here with Ronen Manipas. Today, we interview Sagiv Grinchpan, a professional with 2 decades of experience navigating the complexities of the telecom and financial sectors. Sagiv has tackled numerous executive roles, managed large-scale projects, and led teams in both development and client engagement. He's also experienced at business development and running large delivery organizations. Beyond the roles and responsibilities, Sagiv has been keen in integrating acquired companies into vast organizations, directing teams of over 2,000 people. Let's get a closer look at his philosophies and origin story.
Real life.
Superpowers. Superpowers.
Sagiv, welcome to the Real Life Superpowers podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for inviting me. I'm happy to be here.
How are you these days? What are you up to?
Ooh, that's, as you all know, that's a complex time, you know, nationally, personally, business-wise. So it's more complex than usual. And it's like always, but with more intensity, always, balance between, I'm not even talking about the balance between work and life, but I'm talking in the business sense, balance between the tactical and the strategic, balance between, bringing value to existing customers. Sometimes customer complains, sometimes, dealing with teams that many of them went to a reserve duty, and we had over 50 people that were on reserve, and so how do you deal with this business continuity when people are on reserve, and global expansion and acquisitions of companies? So anything and everything, I would say.
Okay, so like your day-to-day now is like between, a war, and where you have reserve duty, like have like 50 employees go to work. And at the same time, you're actually, like CEO, you're pushing forward and acquiring companies, right? That's a hard thing to understand how it goes together and, a mindset.
So it's very different, very different mindset. And I would say that I need to change context, during the day many, many times. And that's in general, it's a difficult thing to do. But I would say that, you need to understand and to balance between things that are long-term to things that are short-term. And dealing with people that are on reserve duty, this is here and now. These are deliverables that we promise to customers, we promise to the market, etc. And you need to see how do you continue to serve your customer base and the commitments that you made, and how do you juggle priorities sometimes, on a daily basis. I needed to shift, company focus on October, because we needed to deal with things that are more urgent. But after, a few weeks, you're saying, okay, if I want to be, a leading company also in 2 months, 3 months, 2 years, 10 years, then you need to think about, how do you execute on long-term strategies? It's challenging, but you need to force yourself to deal with both.
And you're fairly experienced in respect to managing large-scale operations and large teams. And I'm always wondering, because many of the people that we interview are more, they manage small teams. Like, it's a startup, even if it's 50 people, it's nothing near the scales that you're looking at. And I'm always wondering, how do you make that leap with respect to the mindset? Because you are not able to micromanage a thing. What's the secret? Is it trust? Is it company culture? How are you able to oversee anything that progresses at such scales?
So I'll say two things. One is you need to understand what are the things that you want to really touch and what are the things that you kind of pave the way and show a North Star and do whatever checks and balances you need along the way, but you don't need to be in every detail. And that's something that you learn over the years. I used to be as a team leader, as a junior manager, I was very micromanager, and it doesn't work in scale. But you need to make sure that the direction is clear, and you need to make sure that you have the right people to do it. But I also have a lot of checks along the way. It's not that I don't really believe in fire and forget. I believe in setting it right, and then having checks along the way. Sometimes every week, sometimes every month, sometimes every quarter, depends. But I do have checks along the way. I do have a lot of things that to make me feel comfortable that things are not just happening, but happening in the way that I want. And another thing that is important, that is also something that I changed during my career, I used to surround myself with people that are a lot like me, same type of personality, same energy, same level of excitement. Everyone near me was kind of I was looking for clones. And then I realized that that my team has a lot of blind spots because everyone is looking at the exact same way. And then I learned how to, even when I interview, I'm not looking for somebody who is going to be like me. I'm looking for people that can cover a bigger space, if you know what I mean. Kind of a different type of personalities, different mindset, so we can be, a larger team in the virtual way of things.
But you said to set it up right. And I'm wondering, how do you know that you're setting it up right? Is this trial and error?
Mostly. That's what I called fail fast. So, you're trying to set it up in the best way you can. Even that we are a fairly large organization, we are not formal. So if a developer needs to be in the meeting, then a developer will come to the meeting if he is the expert in his space. It's not that, I'm talking only to vice presidents and they will talk only to the level, to the director level, because I don't think it's working. Because then you lose a lot of things in translation. So you bring the right people to the setup, and you do the right brainstorming together, and you put the right framework. And then, as you start going, you're trying to, as I said, you're trying to fail fast and then, recover or change direction or do whatever adjustment you need to do in order to continue and not wait until the end of whatever effort you're going through and then realize that it was a catastrophe. So, but to tell you that that it's always working, no. But that's the best way that I find successful.
Let's say right now you're taking a new CEO job, okay? What would be the first thing you do, okay, when you get there?
The most important thing is to understand the culture of the organization. I believe that the organizational culture, and I know that it sounds like a cliche, but I really think that the culture of the organization is what drives a lot of the success or failures of the company. Because even strategy, you can change, and I change strategies, but the culture of the organization is the most difficult thing to change. Requires a lot of effort, requires changing of people sometimes, requires different mentalities. So the first thing that I will understand is what works in terms of culture and how do I want this company to be.
But how do you know what works in terms of culture, especially if you're just starting?
Talking to the people, talking to customers, talking to the board, walking the corridors, sitting at lunch with them, understanding how it's a lot of, you know, watching and, you know, less talking and more watching.
And what do you look out for and listen to?
To the pace, to what is the people's agenda. What do they think is working and not working? You know, people tend to speak, and the answers are there. You just need to know how to, you know, take the stuff, take the items that are meaningful, and ignore, you know, noises and you know, internal or specific agendas of specific people. And your own experience on how you think things should look like, most of the answers are there. You just need to look for them.
So if you get the answers themselves, okay, what do you implement? Like, give me an example of an implementation of a new culture. Like, what do you start with?
So, you know, there are many many dimensions of what do you of, you know, how do you build the right culture? But, you know, customer centricity, delivery, meeting commitments, meeting budget, you know, care for employees, formalities. There are many, many aspects. And by the way, by no means I'm an, you know, organizational culture expert. All things that I, you know, I learned from my own. By the way, also when you acquire companies, it's exactly the same. You know, you look at the company, you look at the management, and I can tell you that that's also something that I change over the acquisition. By the way, I've done already probably almost a dozen acquisitions in my career. Seven of them are in priority, but I've also done before. Something that I changed is if my earlier acquisitions, I mostly care about the product, the technology, the customers. Now I first look at management, and if the management is not the one that I think can run with me for a while, then I'll walk away. And it's something that I haven't done earlier.
Did it ever happen to you that you were thinking of acquiring a company and the management seemed solid, but then you realized there is a too big a gap in the culture and the procedures of the company and that it couldn't merge?
Yes. I will even say that there was a company that that in hindsight I wouldn't have bought because of this reason. And on the flip side, there is a company that I bought that I didn't think that the product is, you know, superpower. And because I thought that the management is solid, with the right attitude, with the right mindset, with the right team under them, I ended up acquiring them. And it's a successful one. So I really think it makes a difference. Good management can turn companies, you know, even if they are not super successful, to very successful, and vice versa. So I truly think that it's one of the most important aspects. It's true that, you know, if you don't have product or your customers are not happy, you know, it's not one thing, but it's I put way more emphasis than I've done in the past.
And when you do look into acquiring a company, and with respect, you know, to your acquisition strategy, is this more about keeping a competitive edge and being innovative, or more about looking to grow the revenue? And I guess the answer would narrow down to you know, revenue always,
or talent acquisition.
Yeah, but right. But I'm wondering how much, as a company, are you trying to keep a disruptive edge?
You know, there are many reasons, or not many, but there are multiple reasons why companies buy other companies. You know, sometimes you buy a competitor, sometimes you buy, you know, sometimes you buy talent, sometimes you buy patents, sometimes global expansion, etc. All my acquisitions in priority were all for one reason, and one reason only, was portfolio expansion. So product portfolio expansion. I don't buy because I need revenue. It's true that it's accelerating growth, etc. But the main reason is portfolio expansion. All of them were for this, and that's part of my strategy, because I do believe in you know, expanding the value that I bring to my customers, and as a result I grow revenue, obviously, but that's the reason why I do it.
So when you have a manager, so we're talking about great managers, right, or talents that you got in. Give me the three characteristics that are most important for a great manager.
I would say a good balance between strategy and execution. And it depends on which level of managers. But in general, you know, people that are that care about executions, if there are customers, so you know, customer centricity, meaning they're responsive to customers, they know how to talk to them, they understand what they want, etc. And I would say know how to grow the people under them.
So it would be like they're good at giving service, they care, they're empowering and persistent, sort of.
Yeah, exactly like this. And they know how to empower, as you said, they know how to empower the people under them. So they can grow, and the people under them can grow as well. Because that's how you scale. That's how you can do more. And that's how company grows.
We're excited to be collaborating with the Israeli website CTech, owned by Kalkalist, Israel's leading business newspaper. CTech is the gateway of the Israeli high-tech to the tech world and vice versa. If you're not already a regular reader, we strongly recommend that you check out kalkalistech.com, kalkalistech.com, to stay up to date on all high-impact stories from the Israeli tech scene. So when you were a child, what did you dream of being when you grow up?
Ooh, that's a good question. I wanted to be a musician. I, you know, in high school, I studied computers. And at the end of high school, I said, one thing I know I don't want to do, I don't want to work with computers anymore. So as you understand, it didn't work out. It didn't work out very well.
Why didn't you want to work with computers? Why did you say that to yourself?
I don't know. I thought that it's boring. I thought that it's... that it's not exciting, which, by the way, after that, I changed my mind completely. After the Army, I didn't deal with computers at all. But after the Army, I started looking for a job, and I didn't know to do anything else. So I said, okay, what can I do? I can either work at a gas station, but I know how to develop software. I started going from one software house to another, and I said, guys, give me a chance. I think the fourth or fifth place that I knocked on their door, they told me, you look like a good guy. We'll give you a chance. We'll give you 3 months. We'll see how it goes. If you're okay, we'll let you stay. I said, fine.
Why didn't you try to be a musician?
That's a good question. By the way, I'm still asking myself. But I play in a band, so I do play every week.
What do you play, by the way?
I play a lot of instruments. In the band, I play keyboard. So piano is my strongest instrument. But I play a lot of instruments. Almost at every point in my life, I studied an instrument, so I play multiple.
So I'm still trying to understand how somebody who is so creative and, you know, has music, you know, so deep within your soul, how did you, was it really that practical? Like, okay, I need a day job and music is probably not going to be a promising path, so let's compromise?
No. Unfortunately, it wasn't that deep. I was just, you know, I got my first job because, again, I was 5 years in the Army. As I got out of the Army, I found this job. And then one thing led to another. But I will say that after a few years of break, then I started developing, and I really found it fascinating. So I fell in love with it. I really liked it. I liked every bit of it. I was working until midnight, and I didn't even look at my watch, wanting to go home. So I decided to stay.
You found the creativity within it.
Yes, absolutely. There is a lot of creativity. I'm not even sure now that we're talking about it, about the characteristics. I forgot to say creativity. That's super, super important. And by the way, there's creativity in every aspect of, you know, every person of what it does. There is creativity and innovation in marketing, in sales, in HR, in technology. So you can be innovative and creative in everything that you do. So it's not, I don't think that in developing software or even in being a finance person, you can be less creative than a musician. It's just different type of creativity.
So do you feel that there's a common denominator in you wanting to be in music and liking the stage between you being in it as a CEO and like being on stage? Is that like sort of like how you got off of music and still got excited?
You know, it took a while until I got on stages in this space.
Did you enjoy it on the journey, okay, on the way, as much as you do today?
You know, it's a different type of enjoyment. I think I enjoy it now more than I enjoyed it before. But, you know, I didn't, when I was a developer, I didn't think about being a CEO. You know, it just evolved as I went. Sorry?
Let's talk about that. How did your leadership evolve?
So I did many types of roles in a lot of areas. As I said, I started as a developer, team lead, development manager, etc. After probably 6-7 years that I was in the development space, I was offered to manage a project in a customer in Belgium. I moved to Belgium for 2 years. I went back to Israel became a development manager again. And then my, you know, somebody who from the business side is now a partner in Viola Private Equity said, you know, I'm going to meet customers that are using your product. Do you want to, you know, do you want to join me for a customer, for a few customers visit for a week? And then during the visit, he offered me to move to manage a big customer in the United States. I moved to the United States after we went back a few months after I moved to the U.S. for something that was supposed to be 2 years, and I was there for 14. Since then, I'm in this triangle of, you know, business, technology, you know, customers. But again, I managed after that a division in Amdocs. I was managing delivery. So I was all over the place. And, you know, few people ask me, how did you plan your career to become what you were? And my answer is that I didn't. I wish I could say everything was well planned and I knew exactly how it's going to look like.
No, you don't. You don't wish you should say that.
No, it didn't. Not even close. The only thing that I knew is that when there was an opportunity, I knew to grab it. But there wasn't kind of a mastermind plan that that I knew exactly how it's going to evolve. My advice to people is just, you know, just open your ears and have enough people to around you that you have the right reputation, and that's probably all you need. And a lot of luck. There is no doubt you need a lot of luck. As I tell my management, luck must be part of the strategy. It cannot be the only thing in the strategy.
And also, you know, luck, but be able to identify when luck and an opportunity is right under your nose.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm. I'm curious because it sounds like your transition from developer to manager was pretty smooth. And that's interesting in the sense that it's a very common problem that first line managers, you know, they're good at what they do, developing, and suddenly they have to manage other people. And that's an entirely different skill set. And without some coaching or guidance or somebody to look up to, a mentor, a lot of them fail, also causing churn and problems within companies. So what helped you be able to do this successfully?
You're talking from the technology side to the business side?
Yeah, pretty much. Like them being able to, instead of, you know, coding yourself, now manage other people.
Oh, okay. First of all, some of it is people skills that I know it's not a good answer because either you have it or you don't. But I think that the one thing that, you know, the first advice that my manager at the time, the one who promoted me from developer to team lead, the first advice that he gave me, and I know that it sounds shallow, but it's not, is, you know, he said it in a funny way. He said, you're not a, you know, how do you call the person who sends taxis from the taxi station? He said, the most important thing is make sure that the right people are getting the right task. Not all your people are the same. Everyone has different abilities. Everyone has different, motivations, etc. Make sure that you're not just seeing, okay, who is free and tell him what he does. So I think the most important thing when you make it a little deeper is make sure that you know your people well. Make sure that you understand, you know, how to motivate them. Make sure that you understand what are they good at. Give them the things that are, you know, playing to their strength and not playing to what you need right now. Even if you need to wait a while for somebody who is the right person for the job, do it. And this was my first step in understanding how do you manage a team in the most optimal way. And then, you know, there is a lot around it. Some of it we've talked earlier about, you know, how to motivate the team, how to build trust, you know, how to create something that is cohesive and working well together. How do you build a organizational structure that supports your strategy, et cetera, et cetera. You know, we can probably talk about it for hours.
Was it difficult at first, at least?
The first time that I was managing people? Yes, absolutely.
What did you find most challenging?
The most challenging was to let go, to make sure that, you know, you don't understand exactly what people are doing in every second and how do you balance between what your jobs and, you know, managing. Because at the beginning I was managing, I think, you know, 4 or 5 people, and I was still wanted to be, you know, hands-on myself. So how do you balance between people that are, by the way, some of them were more experienced than me? How do you balance this this relationship, etc.? Yes, it's challenging, but it's challenging fun.
So how do you overcome those challenges?
I don't know if I have a specific recipe of how do you overcome it. I think that you mostly need to, you know, you need to respect the other side, and you need to learn to teach them how to respect you, not by asking it, by earning the respect, and making sure that they understand what they need to learn from you. But also don't forget that you can learn from them. So, you know, don't show up as the sheriff, but, you know, build your trust and earn your respect, you know, from doing, not by asking or by expecting people to respect you. And I think that's, by the way, still happens when I was walking into my CEO role. So the exact same exercise as it was, I don't know, 20 something years ago.
If I would ask them what they think about you, okay, your team or employees, what do you think they would say? How would they describe you?
I will differentiate between business and personal. I think that on the personal side, they will say that I'm not a formal person. They will say that I'm funny. Because they're saying it, so...
It's okay, they're saying it. Don't worry, you're not saying it on yourself.
Self-complimenting myself. They will say that I'm very busy. I'm always doing stuff. They will say that I'm a hard worker. That's what I would... I hope they would say that I'm a nice person. On the business side, they will mostly say that I'm rounded, that I know about a lot of things. Sorry. I know about a lot of things. And that's because the journey that I went through. So I understand technology, I understand sales, I understand marketing, I understand the operations, etc. So I think that's mostly what they will say.
Do you miss being hands-on?
Not anymore, to be honest. I used to when I first started being when I was starting to manage managers, then you're getting further and further away. So at the beginning I was missing it. I am hands-on in different type of ways. For instance, there are strategic deals that I manage the sales process myself with the customers. I'm in every meeting, I'm doing the follow-ups, I'm taking the action items. This is, you know, so different types of stuff. I do feel that I'm hands-on, but I know when do I need to dive and when do I need to step out.
And those processes where you are hands-on, is that sort of because you just feel like it or because it's necessary?
I would say probably a little of both. I hope that that I'm doing when I feel like it because it's useful. And but definitely when something is more fun than you feel like more being involved, I will say that even in companies that I acquired, there are some that I'm super involved because I like it. I like the material, I like the customers, etc. You know, there are stuff like retail, like hospitality. These are areas that are fun to deal with. So I'm more involved in areas that I don't. It's not that I'm, but sometimes, you know, it's more fun. So so I would say probably both.
So let's talk about how are you able to manage stress?
I think it comes with age.
With age, you manage stress better? What?
That surprises you?
Managing stress better? Yeah. Yes, of course.
I'm okay. I can understand, but go ahead.
Yeah, it's true. When you get to your parents' age, then it probably goes the other way around. But I used to be much more stressed when I was younger. Although my job now is probably way, way more stressful than the job I had 15, 20 years ago. Maybe I feel more in control to a large extent. Maybe it's the journey that you went through and you fell into so many bumps and so many holes in the ground that you need to crawl out of that.
You feel like you can trust yourself. You've already been, it's not your first rodeo.
Yes. So that's I would say that's the majority, you know, trust in your team to a large extent. That's part of it. And the rest is, you know, playing music, you know, bees, all kinds of stuff that takes you away from your day job.
What do you mean, bees?
Beekeeping, growing bees.
Where do you grow bees?
Oh, literally. Okay.
Literally grow bees. By the way, that also can cause a different type of stress. Yeah, I grow bees in my backyard. By the way, you can sit, you can have coffee, I would say half a meter from the beehive, and nothing will happen to you.
Well, I'll believe that theory.
Yeah.
We're not that interested. We're not that interesting as we might think we are.
And why do you do it, the beekeeping?
So it started in COVID, I don't know, 4 years ago, looks like. Yeah, time flies, literally. Yeah, we had a kind of a basil in our backyard. They always used to have a lot of bees inside it. And then I started reading about it, and I went to Amazon, and I bought a beehive without bees, obviously. And then I started growing it, became a family hobby, and we're doing great honey.
It's like you can't stop at home managing people, even if it's bees. you build a hierarchy, a company culture. Like, I'm gonna go here. Exactly. I'm gonna go to a place and see the bees. You know, like with name tags, and they're all organized.
Culture. There's got to be culture.
By the way, I have in a regular beehive, there are about, I would say, it changes dramatically between winter and summer, but you know, during the high season, there are probably over 10,000 bees in a beehive. So, but I once did a kind of a, it wasn't a podcast, it was a lecture type of about the similarities between beehive and a high tech company. There is it's a fascinating animal. I can talk for 2 hours easily about how fascinating a beehive is. in so many dimensions.
And isn't it fascinating that, like, in almost everything, when you're into the details, it's suddenly wondrous and an entire universe to unpack, right? It's a little like your developing experience when it wasn't interesting at first, but then you fell in love with it because you sort of dug deeper.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, like, as you said, like everything, you started to uncover a whole new world of excitement. And if you're curious enough, then you can find a lot of things that you, and I'm sure there are thousands of other stuff that, and hopefully some of them I will still uncover.
What would you say your superpower is?
My superpower? I never thought of myself as somebody who has a superpower. But I will say working with people is probably one, and the second one is I would say curiosity. These are the things that I would say are powers. I don't know if they are superpowers, but they are powers.
You would add curiosity also to that list of things to look for in people, right?
Yeah, now that you're mentioning it. But I would say creativity even before curiosity.
It comes together. Right. Creativity and curiosity. One is the attribute. The second is the effect.
Yeah, you're right. It's a good point.
And your kryptonite, your weakness?
My weakness is probably that I don't stop enough. I don't, take a step back. And you know, look at stuff. I don't know how to slow down even for my teams. That's one of the things that I would say is that that I sometimes push too hard. That's probably something that I think I should improve.
And where would you say that you hope to be in let's say 5 years? I don't mean that like in a job interview question, but more like in a personal goals type of question.
I hope that in 5 years, I hope I'm going to still work, but not in a business environment per se. I would say something that is maybe more of a non-profit organization or something that is not for profit type of job. So take my experience in the business world and do with it something that is different.
Yeah, it sounds like something that people can completely benefit off.
After these 4 years, it's definitely a thought. Like four very interesting and balanced years, you know, that's real thoughts.
So exactly. Thank you so much. We wish for you to actually achieve what you set for yourself. And it seems pretty promising based on your resume. So good luck with that. And thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks for your time, Sagiv.
Thank you for having me.
That's all for today's episode. We hope you enjoyed it. If you did, please consider subscribing to our podcast so you never miss an episode. Also, if you have a moment, we would really appreciate it if you could rate and review our podcast on the platform you're listening to. This will help others find our show. And as always, if you know anyone who you think would enjoy our podcast, please share it with them. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back as usual on the first of the month.
Real life.
Superpowers.
Life.
Superpowers.